He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. It's Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Also, don't forget Windy City Intern recovering, but she's still here. She's a trooper. Get her on Twitter, at Windy City Intern. Send her a gift gif of any chipmunk as she has had her wisdom teeth removed. She's not chipmunking as bad. I did learn in an eating contest that I lost terribly with donuts to Mike Golick Jr. that chipmunking is a term. And it's legal. I did not know in an eating contest that you could just shove. I thought you had to have everything like, I thought it was like a kid or something. You throw your hands in the air, you open your mouth, and you're like, ah, and that means you're done. But it turns out chipmunking means shove as much in your mouth as you can right before the end of the buzzer. And Golick Jr.'s got a big old mouth. I think he got an extra like 8 donuts.
My 9-year-old daughter does that every day. We put her in the high chair. She eats all of the food, and then it just stays in her cheeks.
Future professional
we're
leader.
We're like, girl, you got to chew. You come on.
No. You just teach her now. Dunk it in water and then just chug it on down. So I do have.
She lacks the dexterity for that.
Since I know Gojo's not listening right now, I have a rematch strategy on my donut eating contest because I watched, and I'm going to test this at home one day because they were donut holes. And I watched on TV. They dip
so you're practicing donut
I'm going
eating
to,
at home.
I'm going to. Okay. They dip it in water, right? And that's how they manage to, like the buns. They dip the buns in water. That's right. How they manage to. So what I'm going to do next time is I'm just going to take a huge bowl and I'm going to take all the water that you usually drink. I'm going to put all the donuts in there and then just pour the water all over it, which will in essence turn it into donut
soup. Sounds
awful.
You know who figured that out? Joey Chestnut, everyone who's ever been in the hot dog eating contest on the 4th of
July. So do they drink?
Have you never watched it?
Well, that's what I was just saying.
They dip the bun.
It in, yeah. Right. So I looked at it and I thought, but wait, here's the difference. I'm going to take all 30.
He's going to make it like a bowl of donut holes.
Yeah, the question is, can you
eat? It sounds awful.
Yeah, I'm going to. I might even take.
You're still going to get crushed.
I might even take
milk. Yeah, Gojo is huge.
Yeah, I know he's huge.
He's way bigger than
but
you.
But he only got through like 23, 24 of the 30 the right way. I figure I can take all 30 of them, put them in a bowl, let it soak for a minute and 45 seconds, and then just chug the whole thing down.
How many donuts did he eat? Donut holes?
24.
In how much time?
Under 2 minutes.
I feel like I could do.
It's so much harder than you think.
I guess so, because you're really good at donut holes.
Chewing takes so much time on those things. So, yeah. But
I don't know. I could go through donut holes pretty quickly.
I thought so, too.
Maybe so.
It totally defeated me. By the way, don't forget, guys, speaking of fitness, you want to make sure you don't miss out on the 2017 Music City Fit Expo. It's Saturday from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. down at Rocket Town, 601 4th Avenue South. Rocket Town's an awesome place. While you're there, you can meet experts in nutrition and wellness, network with fellow fitness buffs, learn how you can get more involved in the wellness community. It's only at the 2017 Music City Fit Expo. While you're there, ask them if they have any strategy they can give to help me with donut eating contests. Let me know how that goes. So
I bet you they have plenty of advice.
So we're sitting at SEC Media Days, and while we're sitting there, Buck Rising, actually, who was incredibly helpful to the entire team while we were down there, sent a note and said, did you see Pro Football Focus their foundation draft? And I was like, no, I did not. So for any of you that do not know, a foundation draft is essentially a term they use when they're writing articles saying, if we're going to start all of football over and we're just going to blow up every team and we're going to have a fantasy draft and you get one guy that you can build your entire franchise around, not for his career, but from today moving forward. So this is today. Roger Goodell
goes
in.
As they are.
As they are right now. Roger Goodell comes in and says, guess what? Everybody in the entire National Football League is now a free agent. You can pick any one guy to build your franchise around. Who would that be? Now, Pro Football Focus is a medium that some people love, some people hate. We respect it. We understand it.
I totally disagree with it.
Yeah, we disagree with a lot of what they say.
But
they have a metric, and people follow it. So in this process, their number one pick, the number one guy they would build a franchise around, didn't surprise me that much, Aaron Rodgers. Okay, so Aaron Rodgers, quarterback of your Green Bay Packers, number one.
And this is going to sound like sacrilege. I hope my father and brother aren't listening. I would not take Aaron Rodgers number one.
I would also not take Aaron Rodgers number one.
As a diehard Packers fan, I've been excommunicated from my family as of 5 seconds ago, but I would have Aaron Rodgers at number two or three.
And here's my reason why. Tell me if you agree. Age. It's the only reason. He's 33.
Okay, best case scenario, he's as good as Tom Brady, right? You're going to get 5 or 6 more seasons.
Right.
That's it. And that's if you're as good as a guy who's playing at a level that no one's really ever played at before at 38 or 39. So realistically, 4 years is really what you're getting out of Aaron Rodgers. And that's why I would have him below a couple of other names.
The number two person on their list, much younger, Andrew Luck.
He would be my number one pick. I think if you could craft a quarterback out of like thin air, like a Marvel comic guy came down and just created a quarterback out of thin air, I think Andrew Luck would be the size, speed, strength, arm talent, you know, whatever. Like, I feel like Andrew, like John Elway and Andrew Luck are the two most like physically gifted, talented people I think I've ever seen play the position. So I Andrew Luck would be my first pick.
He would also be my first pick. I thought it was interesting to them for their grading system. He came back as the fourth best quarterback in the NFL last year with a 92.4 overall grade, which is significant because he played behind a terribly graded offensive line.
So 27 years old, so right. 10 more years of him.
Yeah, you're going to get 10 years out of him. So we'll skip down quickly. I'll tell you, number three on their list, Russell Wilson. Number four on their list, Derek Carr. Number five on their list was a huge surprise to me, and we'll get to that in a second. They had Marcus Mariota, 23 years old, number seven. Now, I want to start by saying that's pretty awesome. If you had told me coming into the Mariota career that, hey, a couple years into it, people would argue you have the seventh best quarterback in the NFL, you are doing pretty darn well. Well, seventh is nothing to shake a stick.
No, not at all, and that's assuming, and that's, you know, with the age, you know, qualifier there in there. Like, Matt Ryan's 32 years old is behind him. He's the reigning MVP and took his team to the Super Bowl. I don't know if people remember that, despite what happened in the fourth quarter. Cam Newton, at number nine, has been to a Super Bowl. And is only 28 years old and is behind him. Kirk Cousins, you know, 10, Kirk Cousins, okay, that seems a little strange. Tom Brady at 11, behind him, Drew Brees at 12. Obviously, those guys are in the last year or two or three of their career, if they're lucky. And I'm going to sort of stop there because I think once you get to the Patrick Mahomes of the list, yeah, I think you've sort of lost it.
Fitzy, you're going to have to CC Jordan Rodgers on that. I saw, what was that, Cam Newton at 9, Kirk Cousins at 10?
Yes,
so
yes.
I guess Pro Football Focus analysts, guys are going to take Cam over Kirk.
Yeah, they are taking Cam over Kirk. And wouldn't you, I mean, realistically, if you could pick one guy to start your franchise with.
Not even close.
Jordan is squarely the one that constantly comes in and says, Cam's not a great quarterback.
Now, I love Kirk Cousins in college, and I thought he'd be a good pro. I never expected him to be this good. But there's also something, like, I don't think we should ever base our opinions off what the Washington Redskins organization does.
Right.
I'm not saying that they are, but there's a weird disconnect there, right? Like, there's a reason that they've got a franchise quarterback that they're willing to pay to let walk at the end of the year. Like, yeah, I don't know why. I can't explain it.
I can only tell you this is the term that, and I have to give credit to Jim Trotter because he's an NFL insider for ESPN. This is how he described Kirk Cousins. He said, Kirk is straight gangsta. And told me I cannot use an R, straight gangster when it comes to business. And the Redskins have gone to Kirk and said, here's what's reasonable. And Kirk says, don't really care. I know I've got you into a corner. Here's what you'd have to pay me.
So he's Ice Cube with the baseball bat bashing up, you know, coffee tables in like the record executive's office.
He's Suge Knight.
Okay.
He's Suge Knight at this point. He's holding Vanilla Ice off the ledge and he's like, I'm getting a part of Ice baby here, or you die.
He's definitely not Suge Knight.
Yeah, I think he's closer to Ice Cube. Here's the question. I think he's neither, frankly. Here's the question though. If we both have Andrew Luck one, who do you have two? Who do you have three? And where's Marcus Mariota fall? Because I might have Jameis Winston at number two.
Wow. I do not have Jameis Winston. I don't think there's enough body of work. For me, if I'm taking number one is Andrew Luck, I'd have to take a look at Aaron Rodgers at number two, even though he's 33.
Derek Carr would be in the conversation.
Derek Carr would be – I'm such a homer when I say that.
I think it's fair. I think Derek Carr will confirm your homerness.
I will take Derek Carr in the top five for sure because I think of the growth I've seen each year from him, and I have a three-year body of evidence. I wouldn't have said that last year. Russell Wilson has to be on that list somewhere to me.
Would have Russell Wilson behind Jameis Winston, behind Derek Carr, behind Andrew Luck.
I would
put Mario. Now, Mariota's got the injury thing, so if you're really starting to truly dive into all this stuff, Russell Wilson's pretty darn close. To me, Dak Prescott at five is the one that stands out as we have no idea. I think he's a great player, but he was not the reason that team was so great last year. It was other things, and so I think he's going to be a fine quarterback in the NFL. But if you're saying body of work and proof is in the pudding, you know, Jameis Winston behind that offensive line would be spectacular. Marcus Mariota behind that offensive line, we saw how much better he got last year behind a good offensive line. So I would go Luck, Winston, Rodgers, Carr, Mariota, Wilson would probably be my six or my five. I think the ones I take out, I mean, I think the one I take out of there is Dak Prescott.
Oh, I definitely take Dak out. And that was the surprising one. We didn't tell you. They have Dak at 5. They have Jameis at 6. Mariota at 7. And this is their quote on Mariota, and it's an interesting thing we haven't talked about much. Mariota had a crazy stretch in the middle of the 2016 season when he looked like a world beater, 21 touchdowns against 3 interceptions in weeks 5 through 12. Outside of that window, though, Mariota only had 5 touchdown passes against 6 interceptions. So they're basically saying we've seen a win, which is funny to me because they're saying we've seen some greatness, but not all of it's been great, and that's why they justify him at 7, yet they put Dak at 5 when we haven't seen anything. I mean, so to me, if you're asking, like, I would take Luck 1, Rodgers 2, Carr 3. I'm probably going to go Russell Wilson 4.
I just love Jameis Winston. I think he's a uber talent. So
I just don't know.
I would go Winston over Carr or Wilson just because he's 3 years younger. He's 5 years younger than Wilson, and he's 3 years younger than Carr. But I understand why you'd have Carr there. Here's my question about Mariota, and we can wait and do this after the break. Other than injury, what is the question mark? What is the concern about Mark? Is there something he needs to prove? Outside of it, take away the injury stuff, which I know you can't do, but just we're doing radio here, right?
Yeah.
Remove the injury from the equation. What is the question mark about Marcus Mariota?
We'll answer that. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Ever since I was young, they said I won't be nothing. Now they always say congratulations. Hey, we want you to go sign up for our $5,000 home improvement contest. You need to do it now. Go to thegamenashville.com. Register. You can win $2,500.
What?
$2,500. That's $2,500. $2,500 of furniture and bedding from Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, all along with your own spa, valued at $2,500 from Four Winds Spa. Brought to you by Atlantic Bedding and Furniture. Your style, your budget. And also brought to you by Four Winds Spa. Relax. You've earned it. And your friends at ESPN 102.5 The Game. So just go to thegamenashville.com, register to win. That's going to be awesome. And when you win the spa, invite us over. Braden, Julie, and I will come. You don't even need to be there. Just leave like a side key or something, and we'll go spa it up and help you break it in.
One of the funniest things in all of sports, total aside here, before we get to what the questions are about Marcus Mariota, the ball boys at Wimbledon are unbelievably committed to their jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They look so stupid. But they're very committed. Greatest Seinfeld episode ever? When Kramer was the ball boy at the U.S. Open?
Would it not be the single greatest moment in tennis history if we had one ball boy out there that decided mid-thing he was going to have some personality, like he moonwalked back with it?
You threw a slider instead of like holding your arm straight up in the air and bouncing it?
He does like a full-on like cartwheel backhand spring, sort of like gymnastics flips, and he comes out and gets the ball, and then he moonwalks back. That would destroy the internet. Like we'd all have to quit work today because the internet would be blown up because somebody at Wimbledon. Look at that, the way they
update, by the way, Wimbledon? I just don't like the way they bounce the ball back to him. They hold their hand up straight up in the air, and it's like you're like a statue. It looks like you're in like a Russian Soviet Union sporting event.
Shoulders got to hurt. What's the Wimbledon
update? The update is American Sam Querrey won the first set in a tiebreak 7-6.
And now is in the second set.
Trying to avoid getting broken by the Croatian Marin Cilic.
Cilic.
Don't let him break you. You do not let him break you.
I think he plays for the Edmonton Oilers actually, as well.
Better, they're trying to break the American. So you asked an interesting question, and I'm going to answer it straight out of the gate. What is it that we haven't seen from Marcus Mariota? Why, if there's some level of doubt for somebody.
Outside of the injury,
and we're looking at this foundation list. Pro Football Focus put out a draft list of who they would take to build a franchise around starting today using only where they are moving forward. And Marcus Mariota, 7th on this list. I do think there are 2 people ahead of him on this list that I would not put ahead of him, Dak and Jameis Winston. I don't know that I'm ready
Winston.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm ready to say that in this situation. Remember, this is a foundation draft, so it's moving forward today. So I'm not sitting here saying by any means that Marcus Mariota is the 5th best quarterback. I'm saying that from this list and the way it's constructed, I would not put Dak and Jameis ahead of him. Here's what if you're looking at it saying, what is it? Why is there not this level of belief? And to me, it comes from the team. Because at some point, when you have Derek Carr, you build the entire offense around Derek Carr. You just let him get back there and slang it, all right? When you have Jameis Winston, what happens? Like, for most football fans, for most NFL fans, if you walk up and you say, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Who's a running back? They're like, I don't know, whoever Jameis Winston hands the football off to. The identity of the Titans, because of the way the team is built, is still structured in a way that when you talk to national media people and you talk to ESPN people, you still hear smash mouth, exotic smash mouth. And I don't think that's going to exist. I think this year is the year that Mariota sheds the doubters in that sense, because I think they're going to put the ball more in his hands. But even through the process of the draft and getting him more weapons, there is at least a perception that the Titans are a run-first team. And if you're a run-first team with an epic franchise build around quarterback, that doesn't make sense to a lot of minds.
Is that a disconnect with the coaching staff? Like, do you think that's a mistake by Mark Mularkey? Or do you think that he feels like he has to do that because there are questions about Marcus Mariota? Because I don't have a question about – I think if you were going to point to one, my answer to that question would have been the turnovers, ball security. Because he had the fumble issues early in the season last year, and there are a couple of moments where he just threw the ball, just made bad decisions. Generally speaking, young quarterbacks in their first 2 years make bad decisions. They learn how to not make those bad decisions as they move forward. Peyton Manning famously led the league in interceptions, like 28 interceptions his rookie year. So I think you learn from those mistakes. So do you think that's a Mike Mularkey problem, or do you think it's Mike Mularkey solving the problem that Marcus Mariota's not ready yet?
I'm going to say it this way. I don't think it's a problem on either side. I think it's an identity. And I think that part of it is, okay, I'll go back to the music analogy. If you play for a band, you could be the best drummer in the world that can play a million different things. But if you're playing for Sam Hunt, ultimately, Sam Hunt's music is Sam Hunt's music. So your job isn't to play like you. I mean,
is a loose term.
Let me use this example. Rich Redman is a drummer for Jason Aldean. And Rich Redman is one of the most popular, well-liked drummers in town. All the drummers love Rich. Rich is a super talented guy. And when he goes in and sits with other people, he does this stuff. He does this rock stuff on the drums. You look at it, you're like, holy cow. When he plays for Aldean, he's playing exactly what he's supposed to play for Aldean.
Stays in his lane.
Right. So you execute that as well as you can. I think in this instance, Mularkey is that guy. Like, he's the artist. Mularkey has a particular style he runs. So Mariota's job is to be the best quarterback in that style. I don't think you can suddenly turn around and say Mularkey should change things in his offense if that's not what he's comfortable working with. So I think that this is sort of a, hey, this is what I love to do, and you're great. So can we marry the two together and be great together, even if it's non-conventional?
That's the question, is should it be the other way around? Because you, as we've talked about, Derek Carr, it's the other way around. It's Derek Carr is the artist, and we're building our offense around Derek Carr.
That's true.
Jameis Winston is the artist. Aaron Rodgers is the artist. Those are the ones that you build the band around.
That's a fair point.
And so I think that's an interesting discussion about Mularkey. And we've talked about this. We think the evolution of Mariota and Mularkey together is that it goes from exotic smash mouth to number eight's team over the course of a 2 or 3 year period. And we think that could be this year. Maybe it's the end of this year. Maybe it's next year, whatever. That every sort of play and decision needs to run through Marcus Mariota. That if you've got that guy that's that player, Russell Wilson, these names on this list, you know, all these guys. And that's the issue with Dak Prescott on this list, is that that's not what he does yet. He will get there. I think he will. But that's not what he does yet. They turn around and give the ball to Zeke. That's what they do. So I think that's it's an interesting discussion. It doesn't concern that. I don't have concerns about Mariota in that sense. Part of the reason is certain statistical things about Mariota that I love. He is unbelievably brilliant at taking care of the football in the red zone. I you know, to be that highly rated, basically the best quarterback in the league in the red zone, that is a really special statistical category to be the best at. That's the green zone, right? That's why they call it the green.
Right.
That's the money zone, is being in the red zone. And he is spectacular at taking care of the football, making decisions in those moments. So third downs, his ability to bring a little athleticism to the game. I don't really have any – my only question about Mariota, why I'd have him below Winston, why I'd have him maybe below Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, maybe Derek Carr, is the injury concern. That would be my only issue. So to me, I don't have a question about Marcus Mariota outside of the injury question.
I don't necessarily have a question, but you even look at Winston and Mariota, who are going to be joined at the hip for their life. Mariota did play in one less game last year. But despite that, he threw 120 less passes in the process. He threw for 700 and something less yards. Even though his yards per attempt were actually higher than Jameis. So he was throwing more dangerous throws. And even though he threw substantially, he threw two less touchdowns, but he threw half as many interceptions. So statistically, you look at it and say, hey, he maximized his numbers. But you definitely look at 120 less throws and say 700 less yards with a higher per attempt. I'm looking at it and saying, what's being asked of Mariota is substantially different than Winston.
That's the point, is that they've already given Winston – Winston's already the artist in Tampa Bay. Like, they have given him the entire offense. He's going to make some mistakes in that process, but he's already got all of it. Same thing with Derek Carr in Oakland. He's the artist. He's been given the whole offense. There's more of a collaboration here. It's still more of like a super band, right? Like, it's not one guy. It's not Eric Clapton running the whole show. It's like a super band with like three guys that are all really good. Malarkey, LeBeau, and Mariota, like all running it together.
Right.
Trying to figure out what works best.
And it's
eventually you want Mariota to be the star.
And it's a fair point of, if this is in sync, at some point, doesn't Mariota have to become Justin Timberlake? We'll continue the conversation
tremendous
throughout the
analogy.
Day. Thank you so much. Jake Trotter is the Justin Timberlake of the Big 12. He's going to join us and break down all things Big 12. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council producer extraordinaire. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Don't forget, guys, for all the latest news coverage, everything sports in Tennessee, all you got to do is like us on Facebook, follow us on the Twitters and the Instagrams. The Twitters is at 102.5 The Game. The Instas at The Game Nashville. You can also download our app, The Game Nashville, to listen to Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 The Game. When you get out there, you can get all the great interviews that we do on demand and get to them.
And all the bad ones, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, speaking of the great ones, though, Jake Trotter, ESPN Big 12 reporter, joining us this morning. We appreciate your time, Jake. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, hey, guys. What's going on?
So let me just ask you, is there anything that the Big 12 can do in your mind realistically this year to change the perception that there's problems with the league?
Yeah, they can win a national championship. I mean, I don't think there's anything more that the Big 12 can do than that. You know, you look at – I like to use this example. You look at the Big 10 5 years ago. You know, people were talking about the Big Ten being too slow. The offenses were too archaic. They didn't have the speed to compete with the Southern powers in the SEC. And then Ohio State beats Alabama, New Orleans, and wins the national championship. And nobody talks about the Big Ten that way. In fact, you know, some people argued last year they were the top conference in college football. Now, the Big 12 has some real obstacles that the Big Ten didn't have, you know, through conference realignment. But if the Big 12 did, you know, win at the biggest stage, nobody would be talking about the league as being disadvantaged relative to the other conferences. So, you know, the Big 12, again, has some challenges they've got to meet. But if they were able to get to the playoff and win, whether that would be Oklahoma or Texas or Oklahoma State, then I think that would go a long way in correcting some of the Big 12's ills.
Jake, to do that, however, they're going to have to recruit at a significantly higher level than they have over the last 5 to 6 years. And now you've got Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, young, energetic, offensive-minded guy. You've got Tom Herman at Texas, first year, young, energetic, young-ish, energetic guy at Texas. Are those two guys going to be able to recruit at a level that brings the Big 12 back to that stage you're talking about?
Right, you know, and so far they've been really good. You know, even in the last month that Riley's been the head coach, Oklahoma's been on a tear on the recruiting trail. Tom Herman, you know, has done a really good job here in the last, you know, few months of getting players to commit to Texas. And I think this is a little bit goes hand in hand. You know, you win a national championship, all of a sudden players want to play in your conference, and then those players, now you have better raw talent. And all of a sudden, you're putting more guys in the NFL draft. Obviously, the Big 12 had its lowest number of guys drafted this year. So it all kind of goes, hand in hand, and it really is going to be on, you know, a pair of rookie head coaches in the Big 12 to make it happen. Because just like any other conference, the flagships are the ones that really matter, and it's gonna be critical for Herman and Riley to perform at a high level to kind of solve this issue with the Big 12.
We're talking to college football Big 12 reporter for ESPN, Jake Trotter. I'm Braden and Fitz. So, Jake, this is halfway a humble brag and then halfway a question for you. Jodon Rooney, Brasco Flats, good buddy of mine, is a massive Oklahoma fan, and you were just talking about them. So I know Jodon is constantly wanting us to talk more Oklahoma on this show, so we're going to use this opportunity. Can you give Jodon some, like, reasonable, realistic hope that this is finally the year that he's ecstatic?
Well, number one, they have, you know, one of the three or four best quarterbacks in the country in Baker Mayfield, who has won 27 games more than any other returning quarterback in the country, according to Phil Steele, and I don't disagree. You know, the Sooners have the best offensive line in college football going into the season, at least on paper. So you have an elite quarterback in the nation's number one offensive line. You can do a lot of damage with that. And, you know, defensively, they're going to have to get better. They're going to need somebody to emerge at receiver and at running back. But, you know, when you have the supporting cast that those players will at quarterback in the offensive line, you would think that they would, you know, be able to find those guys. Ohio State's going to be big. But for me, you know, for Riley, I think the Texas game looms pretty large. You know, Bob Stoops, you know, really handled Texas over the years, and there's going to be a lot of pressure on Riley to do the same in that series. And, it, you know, whether they lose or win at Ohio State, you know, if they can beat Texas, you know, they've had Oklahoma State's number in recent years. You know, you get to the Big 12 championship and win that game, and, you know, you're sitting there at a, you know, 12-1. I think that would be a pretty strong argument to be included in the playoffs. So I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about Oklahoma, even though, you know, they have some glaring holes on both sides of the ball.
I think the Bedlam series, the road trip to Oklahoma State in the middle of the year, it's been moved. I think that's the one area I'd be really worried if I'm an Oklahoma fan, because Bob Stoops has to count for something, right? Like, Bob Stoops has to count for at least one game, 18 years, Hall of Fame career, 10 titles in the Big 12. Doesn't he count for something this season?
You would think, and as soon as he retired, the line on the Ohio State game, I think, like, doubled. I think it went from, you know, 2 or 3 to 4, 5, 6, somewhere in that range. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that, you know, Riley's a really bright offensive line, but it's a little bit different when you've got to, you know, motivate the team and you've got to, you know, push the right buttons in big games, and we just don't know how he's going to fare in that environment. He might be great, but, you know, it might be a disaster. We just don't know until we see it. So, yeah, I think that's a concern. And, you know, sometimes with these great coaches, you know, there was always a lot of consternation. You know, Oklahoma, you know, they didn't win the national championship after that second season. And even though they got back there, didn't really play very well in some cases on that stage. But they were on that stage because of Bob Stoops. And so it's going to be interesting to see if Riley can continue that success. And we've seen countless examples of programs falling off a little bit when they're, you know, the guys that got the programs to that point, you know, retire or go somewhere else.
Jake, you and I have talked about this a lot, and I'll just go ahead and ask it again. Texas and Kansas to the Big Ten, or Oklahoma State to the Big Ten? Which ones come to the SEC, and which two go to the Big Ten?
Well, in the event that the Big 12 does dissolve, you know, I think Oklahoma wants to be with Texas. I think that's going to be important for them. So I think the most likely scenario is that Oklahoma and Texas go somewhere together. In that case, it would be the Big Ten, because Texas is not going to the conference that Texas A&M did, unless, you know, there's a major change of heart about the Aggies down in Austin. So, I mean, I think maybe most likely it'd be Oklahoma, Texas to the Big Ten, something like that. If you were going to split them up, probably something like Texas and Kansas to the Big Ten and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State to the SEC. That makes a little bit of sense, but it's going to be really fascinating here. I mean, we're not that far away from another potential seismic shift. You know, the Big Ten rights come up in 2022. You know, those negotiations begin to happen a couple of years out. And if Delaney decides, you know, we want to increase our inventory and increase our footprint and our eyeballs and, you know, add to the branding of the conference to enhance the television package, you know, there's going to be some attractive options in the Big 12 that they could begin to recruit.
You can read him on ESPN.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Jake_Trotter. Jake, man, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on this morning.
Anytime, guys. Take care.
Man, you talk about a power move from the Big Ten if they were to add Texas and Oklahoma.
Let's make sure that
would be the biggest story in sports for weeks.
To make sure everybody understands, there is a situation where there's the opportunity for the Big 12 essentially to dissolve in a couple of years. The conversation is just starting to roll on that. If they dissolve, the question is what's going to be best for the power players, because it's those schools that are going to make that decision really for the Big 12.
Can you please explain to me how Kansas is a part of a Texas package?
Well, it does. It depends on what Jake Trotter said there. If Oklahoma and Texas are going to go together, which I don't know if they would, because I don't think the politics would allow for Oklahoma and Oklahoma State to be split. That's what I would wonder about, the state politics of Oklahoma. If they don't allow them to split, those two, to me, makes the most sense going to the SEC. Then Texas is number one on the list, right? So Jim Delaney goes, all right, number one, Texas. Who's number two on that list? Kansas is by far the second best option. Great basketball program, academic institution. Regionally, it's located right close enough to Nebraska and Iowa and all the other stuff. West Virginia is not a Big Ten program. They're just never going to fit into the Big Ten mold. They don't give the Big Ten anything. Kansas brings a massive athletic department from a basketball standpoint, regional fit, and an academic fit. So you're not going to get Texas Tech. You're not going to take TCU. You're not going to take Baylor. So you have to find that other piece, and I can't think of anybody on the East Coast that fits that piece. So to me, Kansas and Texas, and then if it's an SEC fit, you're talking about reuniting Kansas and Missouri, which is a really, really long-standing natural border war rivalry. It really upgrades your basketball side of things if you're the SEC and it upgrades your academics. So Kansas feels like the fourth team in this conversation.
Well, let's hope that the Big 12 goes to the playoff every year and wins like five national championships until the TV rights deal is up, so we don't have to deal with any more of this nonsense.
I mean, because that's the crazy – the entire college football landscape could change from the dissolving. That's why we talk about it some, is because in a couple of years you're going to say, dude, what, when they start talking about this?
Keep it on your radar.
The fact is there's going to be the opportunity for the SEC and the Big Ten to expand in a couple of years. A lot of money's going to change hands. And the way college football is structured as a result in some people's minds could completely be changed as well. So what it could mean to power conferences, what it could mean to the way that this entire process runs is really epic. So it's sort of like that you, there might be a earthquake in the future. That's sort of what it
feels like. Right now we have sort of like 50 puzzle pieces in place out of 60, like sort of. Like that's kind of where we're at. And, like, the ACC has got Notre Dame just sitting there waiting to join as a full football member, and then they would have to add one more team, something, somewhere. The SEC and the Big Ten are the two biggest power players in this because they're the most powerful leagues, the most lucrative, financially stable leagues, with Jim Delaney and Greg Sankey making those decisions. The Big 12 is by far the least powerful, and they look like no one can agree on anything. They don't want to get along. They can't agree on expansion. They have the least viable television sort of situation because Texas and Oklahoma are holding things over everybody else's head in that league. They just, it's the least stable. And oh, by the way, it's also the least talented, the least successful. So we can root for them to win five national titles, but they're not recruiting at all. They're not bringing players in, and they're not putting them into the league, and they're not winning big games. That's going to have to change for, and that could be what Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley do at Texas and Oklahoma. They could change that, but we're going to have to see something change for that to happen. The current pace and the current path is a little that's going to dissolve. The Pac-12 is going to take a couple, the Big Ten is going to take a couple, and the SEC is going to take a couple, and we'll have four super conferences like we've all been talking about for 10 years now.
Speaking of seeing change, yesterday Jared and the GM went off on change they want to see from Vanderbilt, and I think they're absolutely wrong. We'll tell you what it is and why I think they're wrong next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. Don't forget, guys, you want to sign up for this. It's going to be so much fun. The 11th annual Cumberland River Dragon Boat Festival. It benefits the Cumberland River Compact. Comes back to Nashville Saturday, September 9th. I know it's a ways out, but you need some time here because you got to find 20 coworkers, friends, even strangers. Doesn't really matter. The important thing is you do not want to miss out participating in Nashville's most fun outdoor event. Teams from all over compete in a 250-meter race for the title of Grand Champion, but there's a limited number of spots available. So what you have to do is go to CumberlandRiverCompact.org. And then you can register from there. So make sure you do that. Still trying to convince Julian Council to join our team. And so far, he has zero interest. So we're not even an inkling of an interest.
Shockingly.
In getting him to join us. His comment was, I don't hang out with old people on the weekend. That's
which I understand. As
I got that. I understand that. We can't get him involved in it. But maybe we can get Jared and the GM to do it with us. But
hotcakes and pot pie?
Hotcakes and pot pie. And that's a new nickname for the show. Hotcakes has always been Stillman. But pot pie was the new analogy because we were laughing about it yesterday. I'm driving down the road and I'm listening to Jared and the GM, and I've decided that if the discussion was about pot pie, Stillman would come in and be like, oh, my God, there's peas in the pot pie. And then Floyd would come in and be like, well, you know, we just got to see how the chicken and the peas and the carrots work together. And
just get me to the pot pie, baby.
It could be good. We don't know until we try the pot pie. And when we try it, it could be very good.
Floyd can read the whole menu of a restaurant's menu, and you would feel good about yourself.
He would. Like, Floyd just makes you smile. There's a point where Jared gets your blood boiling, Floyd makes you smile. It's the magic of Jared and the GM in the afternoon. Because I'm with you. Like, even any time you've ever gone through and I don't recommend you do this if you haven't. If you go to the frozen food section, you pull out the pot pie and you look at the nutrition information. Like, it hurts, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like if Floyd was looking at me and he's like, hey, this pot pie has 2,780 calories, I'd be like, thank you, Floyd.
But could he pronounce any of those words? Like,
no.
None of us can.
No.
Like, but the thing about Floyd, what's great about Floyd is, like, we're checking into the hotel in Hoover, and he gets he could have, like, an awful room in a terrible situation, and he's going to be like, yeah, I just got a bad room. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, I'll figure it out. We'll work through it. Like, he just goes with the flow, man.
Nothing phases
you. Good way to live.
Well, when you sit next to Stillman every day, nothing phases you, right? So here I am driving down the road, la-di-da, and I'm listening to Jared and the GM, as I do every afternoon on these airwaves between 2 and 6 p.m., and they made a take. And it's rare that something is said that causes me to immediately pull out my phone and call Buck Rising in the middle of the day. And that happened yesterday. Wow. Called Buck Rising in the middle of the day, and I said, right now, the segment that just happened, Jared and the GM couldn't be more incorrect.
Ooh.
So we need the audio. And it's not that their hearts are in the wrong place. It's just that the hotcakes have syrup and they don't need them. Here's what Jared said and the GM said yesterday about Vanderbilt football reacting specifically to the money and the way that they approach their athletic department.
Here's my message to the people at Vanderbilt that don't think that they need to invest. You know, that sense that you kind of brought up and Jordan kind of brought up of, hey, you can still be good and be a great academic institution. And as you said, the alumni groups or whomever that may want to do that, ask yourself this. Do you enjoy baseball? Do you enjoy what Vandy baseball has become? Because guess what Vandy baseball has required in order for Vandy baseball to get to where Vandy baseball is? Tim Corbin said, I want a stadium renovation. They renovated the stadium. Guess what they're getting again? Another stadium renovation. A new facility. Do you think Tim Corbin's cheap? Tim Corbin ain't cheap. Tim Corbin costs money now, and yet they're willing to do it for Tim Corbin because they want to win.
And James Franklin was there, and people all over town have told me one of the reasons that they got better during that time was James demanded some things.
That's Jared and the GM talking about the reinvestment and the investment in athletics in general, which was sparked by a great conversation they had 2 days ago with Jordan Rogers, one of my favorite moments I've heard on Nashville radio in a sincere and honest conversation, and I mean ever on Nashville radio, about Vanderbilt athletics from somebody that was a part of the program. So if you missed it, go back and check it on the app. Now, Braden, you've made a great point about baseball a few times.
Yeah, I don't think the baseball comp is fair here from Stillman's standpoint, because it costs a significantly less amount of money to be at that high level in baseball than it does in football. If you want to pour money into a baseball program and decide we are going to be great at baseball, it may cost you $9 or $10 million to renovate a stadium. They have a fancy, like, super secret pitching lab at Vanderbilt, like, down underneath the ground, like, in the bay. It's like an Iron Man vault that's down there that just creates major league arms. And Tim Corbin is extremely well compensated. All of that pales in comparison to the cost of running a major football program at a high level. If you want to compete with the Alabamas of the world, you need $150, $160 million a year to run that athletic department, that program within your athletic department. If you want to run a great baseball program, it may cost you $10 to $15 million a year. It just is a vastly different undertaking. So the comps aren't fair. His overall message, though, is maybe the different conversation is the commitment. If you want to be committed to winning, you have to put your money where your mouth is. That part of it's true. It's just a totally different level of commitment that's required for every sport. Basketball, baseball, and football all have different thresholds of investment.
So My issue with the comment above and beyond that is that Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, me, you, Julian Council, we're not their target audience. And there needs to be a sincere moment here where everybody realizes who their target audience is. And I'll say this, and I said this before. I was a fat kid that played the violin growing up, and I was part of the music scene in school. the last thing I needed was football guy walking into the drama department telling us what musical we should do in the fall. Like,
are you saying that one person can't exist in both
worlds?
No,
I had many friends that did exist in both worlds, actually. But at some point, you know, there's this football guy or sports talk show guy that thinks that they're the target audience. Look at it this way. My wife is a very finicky, particular eater, and she doesn't like super weird or fancy foods. She won't eat it. So a place like Catbird Seat that I would like to go to, where they pick whatever you're going to eat,
and you have no say
yes. in the menu, we don't go there because my wife won't. She doesn't want to have that experience. I'll go there with my friends. She won't go there.
Which, by the way, it is spectacular.
Sure, for we're the target audience, right. So for us it's spectacular. Now, if my wife walks in there and immediately says, "Why do they not have fried fish with cheese on top of it?" because that's how McDonald's does it. Everybody turns around and says, "What?" Betty, they're talking about McDonald's.
Betty is offended.
And frankly, if I don't particularly like a fast food chain and I go there with my wife and I'm like, well, you know, why don't they have this? I'm not the target audience.
Right.
At some point, we have to remember who the target audience for Vandy is.
This is a great analogy. I love this analogy. I don't take my wife to steakhouses. We started dating. She says she doesn't eat her steak. Like, she eats it well done. And I'm like, we're not ever going to a steakhouse then. It'll never happen. She's not the target audience for a steakhouse.
When we come back, we'll explain who the target audience is and why Vandy is serving their target audience absolutely perfectly. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.